The hard disk drive used to be the most expensive part of a good PC, and it remains a wondrous piece of technology. Magnetically enabled heads literally flying over glass platters, writing or reading gobs of data. How can such a technical miracle also be such a graveyard for profits for years on end? In this video, we look at the birth, boom, and bust of the hard disk drive industry. This video is brought to you by the Asianometry Patreon. Early access members get to see new videos first and selected references for those videos. Early access really helps me a lot, and I appreciate every pledge. Thank you, and on with the show. In 1952, IBM asked a former high school teacher named Reynold B. Johnson to lead a new research lab in San Jose. Johnson was a talented inventor. Early in his life in the 1930s, he invented a machine that could grade pencil-marked multiple-choice tests. Yes, the bubbles. Soon, IBM bought the rights to his machine and hired him. After inventing several new things, IBM asked him to go on out to San Jose and work on some new, interesting projects. Back then, San Jose was a small agricultural city of about 100,000 people. IBM chose to put its new research lab there largely because it was in between major customers in Los Angeles and Seattle. Johnson had wide leeway to hire 30 to 50 people and work on whatever interested him. They took on a variety of projects, but one stood out: a random access processing system to replace something called tub files. Now, I never heard of a tub file before. It's part of a punch card system that very quickly helped you access certain information out of the hole. It worked okay in some use cases, but not so much in others, like invoicing and inventory. Tub files are a form of random access, meaning that we can access any arbitrary piece of information in a sequence at roughly the same amount of time. This is different from sequential access, where you have to cycle through everything in the sequence first to get to the thing you want. When it comes to memory systems, random is often better than sequential. The IBM team decided to explore magnetic recording systems to provide this random access function. A magnetic recording system stores data on some form of magnetic media. A mounted head would then read or write that data off that media. The IBM team evaluated several forms of magnetic media: magnetic tape, magnetic drums, magnetic plates, and even magnetic wires and rods. Johnson eventually used a stack of rotating magnetic disks, with each accessible using read-write heads mounted on a common actuator. He liked this format because of how much surface area it gave you for the size, as well as the potential to access data on multiple disks at once. In an early prototype, they took about 120 aluminum disks and stacked them together on a shaft. Each disk was about 2 feet wide and spaced about a quarter of an inch apart. The whole array spun at about 3,600 times each minute. There were two major technical issues to overcome. First, they needed to figure out how to evenly and smoothly apply the iron oxide paint onto the surface of the disks. One engineer suggested spinning the disks at a high speed and then pouring the paint, the same paint used for the Golden Gate Bridge, by the way, at its center so that it spread uniformly across the whole surface. This technique is now known as spin-on. The second major problem had to do with wobble. The disk will wobble as they spin. How do we keep all the heads at least a thousandth of an inch above the disk's surface if they wobble? A team led by Bill Goddard and John Linet integrated an air nozzle into the head, so then we can use air pressure to push air through the head nozzles, creating an air cushion that kept the head stable. Mounted on a single arm, it would move up and down to the right disc to stick the head in. In 1956, IBM introduced the 305 Random Access Method of Accounting and Control, or RAMAC. RAMAC is a transaction processing system built around what is widely acknowledged as the first hard disk drive as we know it. The drive was made up of 50 iron oxide coated disks, each about 61 centimeters wide. It cost a quarter of $1 million, held about 4.4 megabytes, and was the size of two fridges. These stats might sound ridiculously comedic today, but back then it was an engineering marvel, particularly mechanically, being able to retrieve data in less than a second. In his RAMAC product announcement on September 4, 1956, IBM President Thomas Watson Jr. said that it was, quote, the greatest product day in IBM's history, end quote. Production ramped up in the San Jose factory. The first Raymac was shipped to the Zellerbach Paper Company a short whiles away. In 1959, Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev visited the Raymac factory as part of his U.S. tour. IBM made the disk drive a necessary part of the computer, and an industry was born. First, the other computer makers like General Electric and Burroughs started producing their own hard disk drives. Then, independent disk companies, Bryant Computer Products and Data Products, for instance, popped up. They offered third-party hard disk drives to those computer makers lacking the expertise or capital to produce their own. During the mid-1960s, Japanese players like NEC, Fujitsu, and Hitachi started producing their own hard drives too. Being vertically integrated players, what they made was only for internal consumption at first. Then in 1966, IBM introduced its 2314 file facility and their disk packs. It not only offered more speed and performance, but its 29 megabyte disk pack format made it easier for people to swap storage in and out. A new wave of independent companies copied the disk pack format and marketed those products to IBM customers as being plug compatible with their hardware. Throughout the 1960s, IBM continued to come out with world-leading innovations in hard disk drive storage. Their crowning moment came about in 1973. When they first introduced the Winchester Drive. The name derives from a comment by IBM San Jose manager Kenneth E. Houghton. The original project spec was to have two spindles of 30 megabytes each. Houghton heard people calling it a 3030 and said, "If it's a 3030, then it must be a Winchester." The project nickname stuck. Up until then, the disks in the packs or the HDDs had been removable and accessible. But this accessibility came with particle contamination issues. So IBM sealed off the disks, their individual arms, and motors inside a dust-proof container. This not only fixed the contamination issues, but also enabled the disks to have more storage capacity. That's because it let them cut the distance between the head and the disk surface to a thousandth of what it had been with the Raymac. The closer the head, the more data dense the disks can be. So the Winchester cut the cost per megabyte over competing designs by 30%. The Winchester design became an industry standard. IBM set the blueprint for all other such devices since. For a long time thereafter, people didn't call HDDs hard drives, they called them Winchester drives. One of the guys working on the Winchester's early development was a guy named Alan Shugart. Born during the Great Depression, Shugart graduated from the University of the Redlands and went to work for IBM at the San Jose lab. There, Shugart led various memory projects, one of which was a small, cheap, read-only device for transferring very small programs from one computer to another. IBM called it the Type 1 diskette at its release in 1973, but nowadays we more know it as the floppy disk. Anyway, Shugart would have stayed at IBM his whole career, but then IBM transferred him to New York. He did not want that. So badly, he literally commuted back to San Jose on weekends. Thus, he quit in 1969 and joined a company called Memorex, a memory tape maker, for 3 years. After that, he started his own company, Shugart Associates, but he clashed with his fellow co-founders over direction and equity and left. Shugart Associates went on to dominate the 8-inch and then the 5.25-inch commercial floppy drive markets. Xerox acquired them in 1977 for $41 million. Not a bad exit. After leaving the company with his name on it, Alan Shugart tried some other stuff. Did some salmon fishing, ran a bar or whatever. In the end, he decided to come back to memory and found another company in Scotts Valley in Santa Cruz County. The company's original name was Shugart Technology, but that was too similar to Shugart Associates. So Alan tried to think of a different name, with an S at the start, T at the end, and a G in the middle. He went with Seagate. In founding Seagate, Shugart sought to adapt the IBM Winchester drive for the then burgeoning microcomputer, what we today would call the PC. PC makers had adopted Shugart Associates' 5.25-inch floppy drive. Seagate decided to build a hard disk drive that can fit in the same space but also offer far more capacity. By the way, the 5.25-inch floppy itself came about at the behest of the brilliant Dr. An Wang of Wang Labs. Wang felt that the original 8-inch floppy was too big and expensive and had asked for a cheaper version. Anyway, in 1980, Seagate announced their ST506 hard drive. Its 5 megabytes of storage far outclassed a floppy disk's 160 kilobytes of data. Despite being priced at over $1,000 each, the HDD was an immediate hit. The company made $9.8 million in revenues in 1981, and then $40 million and $110 million the years after that. We should take a pause to catch our breath and revisit the technologies behind the 5.25-inch HDD. The core concept had not changed all that much from the days of the floppy disk or RAMAC. There are 4 key subcomponents: the platters, motors, read-write heads, and the supporting electronics. Bits of data are stored on tracks written onto these double-sided platters, which today are made from glass substrates. We mount the platters on spindles and use the motors to spin them 3,600 to 7,200 times per minute. The data is then accessed by the heads, which fly over those platters positioned by actuators. Electronics help position and support these items. They monitor the head's movements as they align and unalign, and they feed information back to the actuators. So yeah, HDDs today work the same way as the RAMAC, but that is kind of like saying that the Ford Model T shares the same core concept as the Lexus LS400. The engineering to achieve the core concept has been completely overhauled. Even that first 5-megabyte Winchester HDD from Seagate was an engineering marvel. Seagate's engineering VP Doug Mahan remarked then that it was like a Boeing 747 flying at Mach 4, just an inch off the ground. And that was back then. Today, the heads fly as little as 3 nanometers above the disk surfaces. Producing these machines requires lots of capital expenditure to build or source the components, assemble them inside expensive clean rooms, and test them before shipping out to the customer. So how did the market turn all this amazing engineering into a commodity? There have been a few reasons. Computer memory, particularly secondary memory, is generally a commodity. The customer always wants more storage and is willing to jump to someone else to get it. Brand value never gained traction in the HDD industry. PC users upgrade their systems because of something new, like a new version of the Windows OS or an Intel CPU. I cannot imagine many people would buy a new PC because Seagate or Quantum released a new HDD. As a result, PC assemblers played each HDD maker off each other, buying whoever met the spec for the lowest price. IBM is notorious for this. They sourced almost all of the HDDs for their rapidly growing PC business in the early 1980s from startups. In 1983, IBM released their PC XT, the follow-up to the legendary first PC. It had a 10-megabyte HDD sourced largely from startups: Seagate, Miniscribe, and IMI. IBM demanded heavy qualification programs and second sourcing from these suppliers. They also refused to enter into long-term contracts, rightly thinking that it did not make sense to when the market was moving so fast. So that's from the customer's perspective. Let us talk a bit about piling in. The HDD itself is a modular device. The 4 components are precisely engineered but separate, and only 2 contribute to storage capacity and other performance metrics: the platters and the read-write heads. So, new HDD firms can tweak one of these 2 critical parts to create a new improvement, then integrate those bits and quickly bring a new product to a market hungry for innovation. Furthermore, the HDD firms did not at first protect their trade knowledge and innovations with patents. The community of HDD researchers was small, and ideas flowed freely from one firm to another. But whenever a new firm managed to come out ahead by deriving a new hit format or technology, the competition very quickly pulled together something of their own. That then sucked out any profit to be had. For instance, in 1983, the Scottish firm Rodin first produced, and more importantly patented, the 3.5-inch HDD format. They're one of the few European HDD startups to be seen as a relative success. The 3.5-inch format did not gain substantial popularity until 1986, when another company called Connor Peripherals started selling it in large quantities to Compaq. The new format's popularity invited massive competition, and Rodin could not keep up with their competitors' scale and capability. They filed for bankruptcy twice in 1989 and 1991, and evolved into a patent troll, which is sad. Here is a later example. Giant magnetoresistance, or GMR, is a Nobel-winning quantum effect discovered in Germany and France. It revolutionized the HDD's read-write head, allowing for more area density and thus storage. Despite being discovered in Europe, an American firm, IBM, first commercialized GMR in 1997 with a 16.8GB HDD. American competitors Seagate and Readwright had their own GMR heads 2 years later in 1999. And then there were the Japanese, who rapidly licensed and bought their own GMR technology. Toshiba announced their first GMR-equipped HDDs in 1998. One of Toshiba's later products was a tiny 1.8-inch HDD. Famously, they had no idea what to do with it. But Steve Jobs and John Rubinstein did, using it for the Apple iPod in 2002. This wave of new firms crashing into the market was funded by a flood of hot venture capital money. The end of the 1970s saw changes in the capital gains tax rates and pension fund investment regulations, which enabled the rise of venture capital, or VCs. Seagate went public in September 1981, a little over a year after first launching their HDD in 1980. They raised $26 million and the market assigned them a favorable multiple. Seagate's VCs made good money. After the IPO, their $1 million investment was worth over $32 million. It paved the way for how VCs would invest and cash out their investments today. By mid-1983, there were 12 VC-backed HDD manufacturers publicly traded on the stock market, and their total market cap was $5 billion. The market was hot, so VCs raised big funds and poured that money into the disk drive industry, recruiting smart people from established companies to found these startups. From 1977 to 1984, 43 different disk drive manufacturers raised $400 million. In 1983 and 1984 alone, 21 startups raised over $270 million over 51 rounds of funding. By then, there were something like 70 firms in total. So when the PC market first pulled back in 1983 and 1984, it triggered a huge shakeout. Many of the startups did not survive. Nevertheless, this Zerg rush of entrants vastly changed the market. In 1978, 84.8% of the market was held by the old vertically integrated HDD companies. A little over 10 years later, the old guard had just 7.9% share. They were essentially driven out of the market. In the beginning, U.S. firms dominated the industry, but competition came in from abroad. Japanese and European companies did enter the market. The four big Japanese computer makers, Fujitsu, Hitachi, NEC, and Toshiba, originally produced their HDDs for internal use only, but then shifted to an OEM model. However, despite some interesting innovations, they initially failed to make serious headway into the market. That is because the Americans themselves aggressively globalized their manufacturing. In 1984, Seagate began outsourcing the assembly of its HDDs to Singapore. Several other American HDD makers followed. This move was facilitated by the Singapore government's Economic Development Board in one of the most famous cases of Asian industrial policy. By 1990, Singapore was the world's largest producer of HDDs with 55% share of shipments. When Singapore's labor costs also rose, low-value work like assembling the actuator arm holding the read-write head emigrated to other Southeast Asian regions like Malaysia or Thailand. Singaporeans took on new tasks like fabricating the platters or assembling more specialized HDD systems. For information about this, I did a video a long time ago about the history and challenges of Thailand's HDD industry. The Japanese did eventually catch up, outsourcing their production abroad as well. And in the early 2000s, they even captured majority share of the HDD market when Hitachi merged with IBM, before competition and mergers again eroded their advantage away. This intense competition and globalization created enormous benefits for the consumer. From 1976 to 1987, the HDD's data density grew 20 times over. In 1977, a megabyte of data storage cost $560. In 1986, it was $11.89. By 1990, that had fallen to just $6.86, and then 1998, 4.3 cents. But that was a situation that cannot sustain. The technology matured, and companies began exiting the market. There's a whole Wikipedia page about all the defunct hard drive firms and when they exited the market. It's long. The number of HDD firms peaked in 1990 with 66. The next 4 years saw the number of firms cut in half to 33. Failures included companies we never heard of, like Peripheral Memories, Comport, Prairie Tech, Priam, and Tulin. By 1998, there were, quote-unquote, only 16 firms left. Yet even after that vicious shakeout, the market still had too many players. Between 2006 and 2015, the top four HDD vendors had total average market share of just 52.5%. So, four more major HDD firms exited the market from 2000 to 2010. Quantum, IBM, Maxtor, and Fujitsu. They were laggards, and with the market maturing, saw no way forward other than to combine to grab size. Even IBM, the HDD's inventor, decided to exit. While they made some money from patent licensing, their own HDD division struggled to gain more than 25% of the market. In 2002, they merged their HDD operations with Hitachi's. A sad end to a storied history. Today, there are three major HDD makers in the market: Seagate, Western Digital, and Toshiba. They continue to manage their market share as the HDD fades into history, replaced by new items like solid-state drives. It's unlikely they will ever be totally replaced, but the growth and the innovation is largely gone. Looking at this crazy boom and bust in HDDs, it's interesting to look at how the American firms' aggressive globalization allowed them to retain significant market share in the face of fierce competition from Asia. By the mid-1990s, there were no more HDD assembly factories in the United States. But higher-paying American jobs in R&D, head manufacturing, and gimbals have remained, essentially saved. I do wonder what could have been different to avoid such a brutal knife fight in the industry. Maybe an architectural decision here or there. Or maybe that is how it was always fated to play out. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.